For almost 2,000 years, the Catholic Church has pointed the way toward salvation through Jesus Christ. For each of us, that journey starts in darkness, as if in a cave. We invite you now to come with us as we seek wisdom and truth by way of faith and reason with your guides, Mark Tuttle and Timothy O'Donnell. Join us in the Catholic Cave. Welcome once again to the Catholic Cave. I'm Kent Blanford. In the cave with me, Mr. Mark Tuttle, Mr. Timothy O'Donnell. Gentlemen, as we are cavemen and underdeveloped, we still need to set some parameters for how human beings become who they are and what they are. And the question is, free will, nature, and nurture. What effects do these three, the kind of, we'll call it the natural trinity, have on human development?
Well, that's a great question. So I think what's going to be fun about today's show is Mark and I do not see eye to eye on this. So it's going to be kind of fun to exchange. Hopefully we'll be exchange ideas in a way that advances the conversation, but also ideally models the way we might be able to engage others on how we disagree on stuff. So where do you want to start, Mark? Free will?
Let's talk about, forget the free will for a second. Okay. Let's just talk about the will.
Okay.
Okay. So, there's a lot of equivocation on the idea of the will. So, we in the Catholic intellectual tradition come from a standpoint of looking back to St. Thomas and kind of understanding that intellect, rationality, will, those are all combined. Those kind of all meld together so that ultimately your decision-making process is based on the information that comes in through your senses. From your senses, then whether you want to go back to a medieval psychology where you've got, you know, sort of the impact of the senses on the imagination, and then from the imagination we abstract universal principles, and then from those universal principles then we apply that to our whole rational apparatus and we make a decision on how to act. Or if you want to take it a little bit more of a modern setting, you know, you take in the information from your senses. From your senses, then you interpret that, and based off of your interpretation of what you're sensing, you make a decision. Nonetheless, your intellect and your will are working together in that process. And so your will is ultimately attached to your intellect. It's actually informed by your intellect, and therefore you have a certain freedom of being able to choose and decide what your actions are going to be or what your actions are not going to be. Now, that's come into question, and I think there are certain science has kind of looked at that and gotten a little more sophisticated with the understanding of how our sensation works. And then there's also some questions as to to what extent are our choices limited by our circumstances? And so there's a wide variety of views on that we just think we have choice, but we really don't, because our circumstances limit those down significantly. So that, you know, if you're born in a certain country in a certain way, raised by certain parents with certain parameters around you, your choices are by and large, your trajectory in life is by and large set, and your choices are illusory at best. You're not really making these choices. They're already made for you, and your course is set and determined. So, I think that's kind of one set of ideas, but let's talk a little bit about the will. As I said, you know, the Catholic intellectual tradition says the will is connected to the intellect, but what are the other options for where your will comes from and what your will is?
I think, at least in as I understand, at least like Aquinas and those who follow in his tradition, yeah, the will is what we desire. It's what we want, and there's different what are called appetites that serve the will, in that we have intellectual appetites and we have physical appetites. Physical appetites are like what you can think of, like how we commonly use the word we're hungry, but there are desires that we have, and part of the problem that we face as human beings is that our appetites, our desires, our will even is disordered. and suffers from concupiscence. I think what you were talking about when it comes to like the role of, say, one's circumstances, I think is related to will, but it's different in that one's circumstances could limit one's choices, but that's different from the capacity to choose.
Definitely agree. Yeah. Yep. Yep. So, completely agree. Yep.
So I think so. It seems we have will. We desire things. You see will throughout, I would say, living beings seem to demonstrate a kind of will towards. You can look at my dog Barney. He seems to have a will. He seems to want things, pursue things, in for the kind of nature that he has. But I do think, as you mentioned, will and intellect are faculties that we have, as well as imagination, and we also have memory. And I think when you put those, so I understand Aquinas' psychology, I think those are probably the four components that are operative. But in the current setting, when I read or have listened to lectures by like Dr. Sam Harris, who's one of the prominent atheists out there and a neuroscientist, what's come to dispute is whether or not we are actually choosing anything at all, because of what neuroscience seems to be revealing to us. And there's a very famous experiment that I'll share in a minute.
Okay.
But that's what's called in the question. And that if we're kind of hardwired based on our biochemical reactions, which there's a pretty compelling case for that. It's not one I buy, but I could see why people would buy into it. Then everything we're doing is really the result of prior causes and kind of randomness in the universe, and it undermines our ability to concept of free will, and the experiment that is now kind of famous is this: when people are measured on when they have a sensation of having made a choice between A and B, and we now have the scientific apparatus to measure neurochemical activity at a very precise level, the experiment shows that there's neurological activity prior to one's choosing. So the choosing follows what would be seen as involuntary biochemical activity in the brain before one actually chooses. That is that according to that line of argument, the line of argument then is biochemical activity precedes choose. Therefore, which is involuntary. Therefore, we're not really choosing anything. We have a sensation of choosing, but it's imaginary. It's an illusion.
Well, where would how would choosing? I guess I don't understand the opposite side of that, of how would you have some sort of choosing that did not involve biochemical firings?
Well, it's a question of which comes first.
Well, but that would be, for the choosing to come first, therefore would have to be choosing without the biological, without any kind of biochemical firings, right?
I mean, well, one would say that in the Catholic intellectual tradition, the faculties of the mind are immaterial, so they're not measurable. They're faculties of the soul. They're not faculties of the body.
But the soul and the body are one in Catholic intellectual tradition.
They're not so. One.
Well, they kind of are. I mean, until we die, they are inseparable. In other words,
inseparable, but they're not the same thing.
They're not the same thing, and therefore you wouldn't be able to kind of measure one without the other to a certain extent.
Well, you can't measure anything of the soul.
Right.
Scientifically.
Exactly. Right. Hence, any activity of this. Well, any activity of the soul only comes through the body. So there is no immaterial action of the soul outside the body for human beings.
Well, where would you place universal concepts?
They are formed in the intellect, which is intimately connected to the firings of the brain.
It's connected, but it's not the same. I guess that's what I'm saying. An argument that
now we can jump into some heavy duty medieval.
Well, I was gonna say William Lane Craig, he's a Protestant philosopher, but he's theologically he's Protestant, but he's a pretty thorough thinker on philosophy. He has a really interesting short YouTube video on free will that I came across recently. And one of the things, so he holds, I think, a position that's very compatible with the Catholic understanding of the immaterial nature of the soul and faculties of the soul, like the intellect and the will. And that is this, that there are states of the mind that are not identical to brain activity. And I think that's what Plato's saying, right? It goes back to Plato. It goes Adler even, right? Universal concepts can't be located in molecules. It can't.
Correct.
And so that's where Harris's argument becomes. That's how we would begin to respond to Harris's argument. But his argument is pretty compelling because he's saying that, and based on this experiment, he's got other arguments too. But for example, that the biochemical activity of the brain is responsible for all sorts of subconscious involuntary activity, like regulating things of our physical bodies, production, breathing and production of red blood cells, on and on and on. And so he's going to say his argument in part is going to be one of the legs of his argument is that because we can't control, for example, what ideas or thoughts pop in our head a lot of times. Right. And so that's an indication to him that all that's happening on this deterministic level, this neuroscientific level is, I would call it brain fizz. There's biochemical reactions. And free will is just an illusion because it doesn't map to anything in the brain, according to him.
Right, right. And I'm not sure that you, I guess I'm not sure that you would need it to map to anything in the brain necessarily. But I tell you what, we're coming up on a break. Let's take a break. And when we come back, let's talk a little bit about how the mind, how the will, how the intellect maps and coordinates with the body a little bit more. And maybe that'll move our conversation along.
And right, we'll take that up as soon as we get past these messages. You're listening to The Catholic Cave on Catholic Radio Indy.
You're listening to Catholic Radio Indy, converting the culture to Christ through radio, featuring 100% Catholic programming 24/7. Do your friends a favor. Tell them about Catholic Radio Indy.
You know us as Catholic Radio Indy, but we're so much more than just radio. We're a website, CatholicRadioIndy.org, with access to great Catholic resources, including podcasts of all our local programming, podcasts that have been downloaded from all 50 states and over 40 countries on 6 continents. Yes, we are Catholic Radio Indy, but thanks to your support, we're taking the gospel of Christ to the ends of the earth. Catholic Radio Indy and CatholicRadioIndy.org.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle here with Timothy O'Donnell and Kent Blanford, and we are back after a brief, although it seemed briefer to you than it really did to us, delay, because we, with the wonders of technology, had to discuss the reacquisition or finding of a password, which now, that may sound a little like irrelevant to our conversation, but I think it has everything to do with what we're talking about. So here in the Catholic Cave today, we are talking a little bit about free will. We're talking about how much of our own thoughts and how much of our will and how much of our decision are actually within our own control. And we were addressing sort of a challenge to the idea that we do have any control from Sam Harris. And one of the thoughts that Sam Harris had is, well, there are no decisions that happen prior to biochemical firings in the brain. You can map the biochemical firings and, they happen simultaneously, if not a little bit prior to any decisions we make. So therefore, those decisions have to be all mapped back to those biochemical, and there can be nothing, no thought, no decision that's not mapped back to the biochemical firings. So now let's get back to our password a little bit. Kent was explaining that there is a lost password that has to be basically reacquired by the IT people. They have to go in and find it. And the question is, where within the hard drive, where within the computer's apparatus is this password stored, and what is the nature of this password itself? Because that password, it could be in one computer, it could be in five different computers, it could not actually be in a computer and just have to be reacquired by and pulled down from the computer, right? So this password has sort of a at least a sensation of an independent existence from the computer's wirings, right? So you've got this password that is somewhere in the computer, we think, but it's not actually in the computer, because all that's in the computer are electronic firings. There's nothing else other than circuits and wires and electronic components that go into a computer. So this password is really just code. It's really just a bunch of ones and zeros, ultimately. And those ones and zeros get communicated from one computer to another. But yet, that same individual code is transferable from one computer to another computer to another computer to another computer, and therefore has a certain, I would say, independent existence from the computers. I would say, you know, the universality, our intellect, our attempt to get our mind around the things out in the real world break down to that. They break down to something similar to that. And I won't even say exactly like it, because I think our brains work differently than computers do. So I'm not sure that you can make that analogy. But within the computer world, you have something very similar to what we're talking about, of something that has an independent existence that can kind of exist outside the context of the computer itself, but yet is wholly dependent on the firings of the computers themselves.
It's an interesting analogy. I'm not. It has its merits and limitations, I would say. One of the things that's interesting in this discussion to consider, and I brought up briefly, but I go back to our namesake, the cave, right? From the allegory of the cave, one of the great insight that Plato had was that there are non-material realities. Non-material realities we often refer to as spiritual realities. And the purpose of the cave was, or that one of the I would say the primary lesson from the allegory of the cave is that we come out of the darkness of the cave, where we just run into particular instances of things, into the light of the divine ideas or the divine forms, these universal concepts of things, which are themselves non-material. So they don't exist in the same way that other things like even a computer code exist, because a computer code can always be reduced to a material reality, where a universal concept like triangle, or you can take something like numbers, you can take something like the idea of freedom or justice, equality. These things are not reducible to particular material. They're not reducible to material objects, but rather we have to make our, I would say in the Catholic tradition, our understanding would be that our intellect makes use of the brain, the physicality of the brain, in order to apprehend these things. So if one has an impairment to one's ability of cognition, or we measure, there's certain tests that measure intellectual capacity, there are kind of physical constraints that the physical body places causes a kind of limitation to the faculties of the soul. I think that's one of the great blessings will be after we die and our souls separate from our bodies. That's why we have hope that we'll have a different, especially after the resurrection, we'll have a different, I think, experience of what it means to be embodied souls, in part because some of those limitations will be lifted.
Right. I think the nature of our intellect will change based upon,
or at least won't be as constrained.
I think it'll change and no longer be as constrained. In other words, even after the resurrection, our bodies will have an intellect that has enjoyed and is equal to, if not surpasses, the angelic intellect, in that we will be able to see God face to face. We'll be able to know truth, not from the way our brains do right now, which is, you know, through sensation, acquiring, you know, the information. Like I said, whichever psychology or set of psychology you want to put to it, that tends to be how our brains work. We sense things from that sensation. We process it. From the processing, we come up with ideas and notions. Different words have been used by different philosophers for that whole idea of a thought, and which I guess could also be construed as something different from an idea. But nonetheless, an idea or a cognition or something like that. And then from that, we can either piece those together to make more and more complex ideas, or we can apply those to universals, depending on which sort of branch of the philosophy. The question of will, though, comes not so much in the processing of information, but it comes in the control of information. And that, I think, is an interesting question back to Sam Harris. You know, he says there are some thoughts that just randomly pop into our heads. So there are some thoughts that we don't have control of, but there are some thoughts that we do have control of. And those aren't always...
That's the dispute.
That would be the dispute. He would yeah. say, so he would just say they're all based on stimulus of some sort. But that stimulus has to be internalized at some point.
I don't even know if he would use the word stimulus. I would say he relies on terminology of cause and effect. And there was a really interesting, it had its flaws, but there was a really interesting Netflix series called Devs, D-E-V-S. And it seemed to stand for development, and it was based on a Silicon Valley, you know, high tech computer software company. And part of the premise, really, and it's a bit of a spoiler alert, I might give a little bit of away, but is if it was well worth watching if you're interested in this, whether or not there's free will, because they had built a machine in a computer that was sophisticated enough to account for all prior causes that had ever happened throughout history, and therefore could predict, because the assertion is everything is cause and effect. So if you can account for prior causes, you know what the effect's going to be. So this supercomputer could account for all prior causes and therefore predict the future, know what's going to happen next as a result of it. So it was very, it was a very interesting way to get at this question. And at the end, Devs, D-E-V-S, didn't stand for, wasn't short for like development, like software development. It actually, in Latin, they don't have there isn't a letter U. U is a V. And so it wasn't Devs. It actually was Deus, meaning God, that they were playing God. And so by trying to account for it. So I think that's Sam Harrison's position generally, that everything is can be accounted for. If we look closely enough, prior causes are what result. So the prior, in his case, there is no free will, because the prior cause of neurochemical activity and randomness in the system, which is kind of a homage to Darwin, accounts for everything. And so here's the real problem with that position, I would say. It is this. If you don't have free will, meaning that you don't have the ability to make choices because you don't have the faculty of choosing, then responsibility drops right out of the picture. Because if I'm really not, if everything is just brain fizz, biochemical brain fizz, then of things I can't control and are involuntary, then I'm not, why would I be responsible for what happens next? It's just what my brain is doing.
Yeah, and I think there's two different, sort of considerations to be made there. First off, the use of the term causes. You know, I know Sam Harris means it in a different way than St. Thomas meant it. But if you go back and you look at you look at St. Thomas's, you know, at the very beginning of the Summa, he summarizes his proofs for the existence of God. Now, these aren't proofs, these are demonstrations. So just anybody that wants to jump on that of, well, St. Thomas didn't really prove the existence of God. Yes, but he demonstrated it. Nonetheless, going back and looking at that, St. Thomas would agree to a certain extent that everything in the universe is cause and effect, that there is no such thing as an uncaused cause until you get to God, who really has to be kind of outside the created universe. So everything within the universe itself is caused and is an effect, and there is no uncaused cause. So if Sam Harris is somehow going and trying to look at the idea of will as being an uncaused cause, in other words, for us to have free will, we have to be gods, then he's exactly right. But I think even St. Thomas Aquinas would say, no, there is nothing within our will that is not caused. You know, our wills are completely dependent on other effects all the way down, because we are not in ourselves gods. So, you know, I think that's that's sort of an interesting use of the term cause, that if you put medieval scholastic use of the term cause with him, I think you begin to see that he's looking for something that doesn't exist and never has existed outside of God, and that is an uncaused cause.
And with that, we're going to take a break. We'll be back with more of the Catholic Cave, talking free will and brain fizz right after this.
Anytime you get in the car, turn on the radio, you know that there's going to be something encouraging.
The right words come on, and you know that that's a word from God. God is really listening to you. He hears you.
Catholic Radio Indy.
Have you ever thought about joining the Catholic Church? Have you just wanted to explore the Catholic faith? All you need to do is call your local Catholic Church for more information. We are always happy to help you in your journey to discover and learn more about the Catholic faith. We have classes that are almost year-round, and the classes and information sessions do not involve making a commitment, and there is no pressure to join. Please call your local Catholic parish for more information today and start the journey of one day possibly becoming Catholic as well. God bless.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle with Timothy O'Donnell and Kent Blanford here on the Catholic Cave. And we're talking ultimately about the idea of free will and how much we have control over our choices. And this kind of comes at us from a challenge that the philosopher, neuroscientist Sam Harris had. Sam Harris is an atheist. He believes that there is nothing but material causes for things all the way down. Mm-hmm. And we were just talking about the notion of cause. And, you know, for Sam Harris, he seems to think that to be able to have some sort of will, that will has to be uncaused. It has to be its own cause. It has to be sui generis to a certain extent for it to be, to count as a cause. And that I think is way too high a bar and threshold for something to be seen as kind of a will, because human beings, I think nobody has ever said, St. Thomas has not said, Catholic theology has not said, that we have completely uncaused wills.
right.
Yeah, and
his position is problematic for sure. But the way he does, he has several numerous like YouTube, you know, interviews and lectures and things like that. And so if you do Sam Harris free will, the ones that pop up, I watched several of them pop up on top, are actually, I think they're compelling. I mean, he's making sound logical arguments for his case. And I would say to the, you need a certain level of, I would say, critical thinking skills in order to begin to identify his presuppositions. So he won't call out in his argument what you just did, rightly so, Mark, which is his presupposition is materialism, that everything is everything in the universe, everything is, he probably wouldn't even say created, but everything in the universe is only a material reality. There are no spiritual or non-material realities. That's one thing. Another thing we would say that is that's a fallacy. That's false. It's not true. There are realities that are not material. The soul is one, God is one. I mean, there's others. Free will, I think, is an example. It's a kind of faculty that's immaterial. Well, anyway, the other point he made, or the other big, I would say, error in this notion that that he has of biochemical, you know, human beings are biochemical organisms, and if we just science will eventually reveal. It was Dr. Redpath. I just had a flash. Dr. Redpath, when he was on years ago, he remember he would bring up, like, who was it? It was Hobbes, or no, it wasn't Hobbes. Who was it? Would torture nature until it revealed its
secret. Bacon did it.
Francis Bacon. Yeah. So that was a great expression. And I think that's Sam Harris's kind of way of thinking of things. But scientism is also a kind of philosophical error that the Catholic intellectual tradition would take issue with in terms of defeating scientism. And actually, I think C.S. Lewis, even though he's not Catholic, I think he was I'm gonna just speculate that C.S. Lewis was a anonymous Catholic. Like, he was Catholic, he just didn't know it.
Possibly. I don't even think to appreciate C.S. Lewis you have to go that far and baptize him. You know, I think, although he was a baptized Christian, right. But I don't think
high church Anglican.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But he certainly accepted the vast majority of the magisterial teachings of the Catholic Church.
Right,
so,
right.
I mean, there's very little in there that he would dispute with what the Catholic Church says.
Yeah. Well, I want to unpack a little bit, or go down the road just a little bit further on the implications of the denial of free will. Because again, I think Sam Harris isn't the only one that's making this argument free will is an illusion. There are others that stand in his intellectual tradition, and some of the problems, though, I think, that arise if you don't have the faculty to choose, if everything is you really can't hold people accountable, say, for evil that they do. The categories of good and evil really kind of drop out as objective categories, because if you don't have the capacity, the faculty to actually choose, if I'm not really choosing, if it's just brain fizz, biochemical activity in my brain, then how can I be responsible for what happens next?
Right, and that's a much broader question of determinism, because you've got people like Sam Harris that talk about how we are biologically determined, and that biological determinism can be everything from looking at it at the biochemical level, the way Sam Harris does, to looking at it from an evolutionary level, that we have evolved into the creatures that we are, and therefore we don't have control of our appetites.
Well, we're going to keep evolving. We're not done, right? On that way of thinking.
Right.
So,
yep, exactly. But you also have historical determinism, that history has dictated the events all the way down to where we are right now, and so because of that, the range of choices available to us has narrowed to where it's almost non-existent. Mm-hmm. So choice itself is an illusion. It's not the act of choosing that's illusionary there, but it's the choices that are illusionary, right? And so you've got historical determinism. You also have a sociological determinism. In other words, we are all creatures of the sociological milieu that we raise in. And I think that gets back to
a strong influence, I would say, and
that gets back to a lot of critical race theory.
That's a whole nother show.
But
Carl Truman that we had on.
But exactly. You cannot transcend and I think by race, critical race theory is looking more and more at a sociological construct of race rather than a physical construct of race, although the two are related to each other. Mm-hmm. But you cannot escape your whiteness, Tim. That's what it ultimately comes down to. You are white. You will always be white, and you cannot escape that. And there's certain sociological baggage that follows from your whiteness. And so I think that's all part and parcel of that whole sociological determinism. The social sphere that you were raised in determines your choices, determines your thoughts, determines what you're going to choose, what you're going to decide, even what you're going to drink, because white people evidently drink Pepsi. They don't choose Coke. So,
Good
I think
Lord,
that's
really?
kind of there was a bit of a scandal coming out of some of Coca-Cola's racial sensitivity training. But anyway, nonetheless, all of that is determined. So there's different types of determinism, whether it's biological, whether it's sociological, whether it's historical determinism. But all of it reduces down to the idea that your choices in life, your ability to make decisions, are really determined elsewhere other than by your will.
I'll tell you who's interesting in this discussion about, they haven't brought up yet, about free will versus determinism, is Jordan Peterson has some interesting lectures and thoughts on this. And one of the, as I understand his position, he takes kind of a middle ground, which might be kind of where we're discussing it, which is that as Catholics, I think it's important that we acknowledge, recognize, and accept that human beings have the faculty of free will. But then when it comes to what choices we have and how we go about choosing, that's where things like all the things you were bringing up include, but also education. We recently talked about that on one of our programs. But then Jordan Peterson brought up something very interesting. I haven't worked this all out because I just came across it recently, and it has some interest. He points out, and he's a psychologist, and he points out that in our brain and our thought, we kind of sometimes will preload actions and then we carry them out, and then we once we decide to carry it out, like snap our fingers. Once you decide to snap your fingers, in the middle of snapping them, it's really hard to stop. You preload this idea. So as I understand, like you preload your mind, I'm going to snap my fingers. So that's a preloaded action. Then I execute the action, and it's a quick action. While I'm executing the action, it's nearly impossible to stop it. And so he says free will is kind of like that. He says it's kind of like if you're driving a car at 40 miles an hour going down the street. The further you look out down the road, the more control you have as to where the vehicle is going to go. But if you're going 40 miles an hour and you look down and there's something 5 feet in front of you, it's too late. You're going to run it over. It's too late. So he has this kind of, I never thought about that. There's a kind of like a timeline that he incorporates. I kind of begin to think about it as like almost like a gauge that the further out in time that we think about free will, like say the vocation, as we discern vocation or live out of vocation, let's say of marriage, the longer term we look, the more freedom we have in terms of what our choices are. But then as you get closer and closer and closer to the present, all of those prior choices, all the prior setting that we find ourselves in or the current setting, has greatly limited it. Like, for example, take your job. You can't change your job just over, you know, in a split second. You would have to, if you want to stay employed, you have to go find another job. And if you want to change career fields, that's a whole nother. So I think there's some merit to the way he's approaching it, because it sounds like he's got enough room to affirm free will, that the faculty of choosing in the human person. But then he's also acknowledging in a very interesting way the situation, the environment, and prior causes also have an effect on us that is variable depending on the time frame that we're looking at. So I found that fascinating.
Yeah, and I think that's very compatible with other psychologists out there. You know, Jordan Peterson is a psychologist by training.
He's kind of a Jungian.
Yeah, exactly. But there's other psychological research out there, and I think it predates Jung and Freud, so it's like almost kind of pre-Freudian psychology. Mm-hmm. that shows that our moral decision making. So yeah, we make all sorts of different decisions, but our moral decision making is often what's called pre-rational. And that doesn't mean that it's not rational. It doesn't mean that it's not controlled by our will. But when we make those decisions about right and wrong, we make them based on basically prior thoughts, and we make them and then reflect on them and then change our morals. So there's a moral framework that we operate off of that is influenced by our intellect, influenced by our thought, and influenced by our will. But the actual moral decisions that we make at the gut instinct level is exactly that. It's something that is made kind of prior to thought, and then we can adjust that framework based on thinking about it and all of that. But the split second decisions, those are to a great extent already determined by prior thought, by prior rationality, by prior learning, by prior experience, and then we can adjust that upon reflection. And that's why something like an end of the day prayer regime, where you're praying at the end of the day and reflecting on the course of the events. I think that's why that's so valuable, because then you are being able to apply through prayer with God's guidance that sort of moral discernment about right and wrong that's outside of the sort of split section decisions that are made during the day.
And with that, we need to take our last break of the day. We're going to be back with more on all kinds of subjects like free will and brain fizz right after this.
The 40 Days for Life campaign is taking place February 17th through March 28th. This peaceful, prayerful vigil will be held Monday through Saturdays, 7 a.m. till 7 p.m. and Sundays noon till 7 p.m. at Planned Parenthood, 8590 Georgetown Road, Indianapolis. Or you're invited to pray anytime from home. Join pro-lifers across central Indiana in praying to change hearts and save lives. For information or to sign up, visit 40daysforlife.com/Indianapolis.
Take Catholic Radio Indy's 40 Days of Lent Challenge. During Lent, listen to at least 1 hour of Catholic radio each day. If you're already a daily listener, add an hour each day or pick a different time to listen. Or, if you really want to go all in, listen exclusively to Catholic Radio Indy from now until Easter. Spend 40 days with Catholic Radio Indy and see what a difference 100% Catholic programming 24/7 makes. Throughout Lent, you're invited to join us for the Stations of the Cross every Friday afternoon at 4:45 p.m. right here on Catholic Radio Indy. You're listening to Catholic Radio Indy, converting the culture to Christ through radio, featuring 100% Catholic programming 24/7. Do your friends a favor. Tell them about Catholic Radio Indy.
Ever since we've been on the air at Catholic Radio, we've always wanted to have billboards, but they just don't fit in our budget. And since you'll probably never see a real billboard for us, I'm going to ask you to do something, to imagine one. In your mind, picture a large, empty billboard. Yeah, that's it. Now pick a background color, any color at all. Okay, then across the top of your billboard, put just two words, Catholic Radio. Make them really big. Then, below that in even bigger letters, put 89.1 and 90.9 FM. Wow, that's a great billboard. Now, if this billboard were real, all of your friends and neighbors could see it, and they'd know all about Catholic Radio. But since it's only an imaginary billboard, we're going to have to depend on you to tell your friends about Catholic Radio. Remember, Catholic Radio 89.1 and 90.9 FM. Oh, and by the way, nice choice on that background color. It really looks good.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Timothy O'Donnell with Mark Tuttle. And our trusty sidekick, Kent Blandford, is here as well. He's over there enjoying brain fizz. I think he's going to quiet this show.
That's a great word. It just is.
Well, considering this show, my brain fizz right now is Diet Coke and Mentos.
Wow, there you go. That sounds good. Interesting. Yes.
So what, Tim, we do have to ask, what is the origin of the term brain fizz?
Oh, well, there is a pastor on, he's a Protestant pastor who does a lot of pro-life, he and his church do a lot of pro-life ministry, and he does a lot of kind of, I'll call it man on the street kind of interviews with those who are pro-choice, and he's on YouTube, and the name of the church is Apologia. Church, and he calls it brain fizz because he defends the immaterial of nature of different intellectual realities, such as the soul, abstract concepts. Scientism Science itself has to rely on certain presuppositions that are only available to us through philosophy, and he acknowledges that. So when he's encountering, such as that the universe is external to ourselves, that it's intelligible, we can actually know something about it. These are philosophical claims. These are not scientific claims in the sense that that's not what chemistry tells us about it. Chemistry tells us other really important things. So, but he calls it brain physics, neurological activity. He nicknamed brain physics, which I love. I think that kind of sums it up, because if you really think the human person or reality is only comprised of material goods, atoms, molecules, things like that, then we are, we have a lot of morality, as you were talking about, is fraught with problems, because how can I be responsible if I'm simply carrying out involuntary brain activity, is determining what I'm doing and what's going to happen next, then why hold me accountable? And then let's think about one other thing, which is this: God is love. Right? God is love. It's hard for brain fizz to account for love, for authentic love. It can account for warm feelings, sentiments, that sort of thing, but it really can't account for love. Love in the strongest, fullest sense of the word. So there's a lot of problems there.
You have not heard about the empathy gene. That evidently evolutionarily, mankind back in evolution sort of evolved into the empathetic creatures that we are. So you've got an empathy gene.
I think that's highly problematic too. When there have been, I've seen some of it, the very uncompelling arguments for things like that.
Yeah, and
because why wouldn't you? Well, we can do gene editing now to some extent, and so why not manufacture human beings that don't have, say, maybe empathy is an undesirable trait if you were trying to, let's say, grow a military force.
Right. And I think there's the Hobbesian argument, you look at the novel Lord of the Flies, right?
Oh yeah.
And and honestly, it's an interesting book, because it was based off of a real life event that the results of the real life event were completely the opposite. There was a group of boys that were lost in a shipwreck, and they found themselves on an island, and they created their own little society with rules, and they survived for a year, basically recreating a society that functioned and worked really, really well, evidently. But based off of that, William Goldman, there we go. He took the opposite and made this sort
evolve.
Of this state of nature, this Hobbesian state of nature, where quickly devolved into all against all, the upshot with that is, I think we can all imagine situations where humanity does seem to lack this empathy gene. It is not something that comes to us naturally. We have to be taught how to, or we have to be socialized into empathy. Anybody that looks at a toddler, I think, can kind of recognize this.
Some of them are challenging. Yeah, that's
for sure. You have to teach the toddler not to whack his brother over the head with the toy that his brother wants.
Right,
I mean, that has to be kind of taught. It's not genetically ingrained into people to have that kind of empathy. Getting back to the whole question of brain fizz, and how much it accounts for, I come back to Edward Fazer a little bit. And anybody that's interested in these topics, Edward Fazer in some of his books, particularly The Last Superstition, I think is the book to kind of look at involved in these questions, particularly ones that are raised by atheists like Sam Harris. I'm reminded that Fazer kind of used the analogy of cleaning a room and sweeping things under the rug of philosophy of the mind. In other words, we can clean up the room and we can tidy the room completely and clean it all up, except for this pile of dust that's left over at the end. And we can never know what to do with that pile of dust until we sweep it under the rug of philosophy of mind. And so, for centuries, modern, you know, contemporary philosophy, contemporary theorists, contemporary atheists have been tidying up the room, looking at everything based on material causes, based on brain chemistry, based on brain fizz. And they always get back to this little pile of dust that they just keep sweeping under the rug. And, you know, that pile of dust begins to grow until eventually you've got a noticeable lump in the rug. And he says that's kind of where we are right now. We have this noticeable lump in modern theory that's supposed to go back to biology, supposed to be all material, supposed to be based on pure science, but there's always the lump of philosophy of mind that can never be gotten. And I think the best analogy for what this philosophy of mind is somebody watching television. You know, if you're watching television, you can come up with a material explanation of what's going on in watching television from the makeup of the television, that the television is producing electronic firings. Those firings are being produced are being translated into particles of light or photons of light. Those photons then are coming. They're striking the back of your eye, the retina, and from the retina, then they're getting translated into neuron firings, and those neural firings are then going, and they're becoming some variety of brain fizz. But at the end of the day, all of that is only describing the act of watching television. But to actually be describing what's going on in an act of watching television, you have to have a watcher. You have to have somebody that is actually doing the watching, that's mm-hmm. actually controlling to a certain extent the process of all of the firings and things. And that cannot be accounted for based on biochemistry alone. You're always going to have the problem of the watcher, of who it is that's actually doing the watching, that there's somebody that is doing the watching that isn't just brain fizz, that's something kind of on the back end of the brain fizz that's doing the watching.
Yeah, I think that's right. So this more broadly goes to this notion of, again, kind of materialism, that materialism is an insufficient account of reality. And the human person is probably the single best place to start, and maybe even finish, with how the human person cannot be reduced to mere material reality. I mentioned love. I mean, if all that's happening when you tell your spouse or your children that you love them, if that's just simply brain fizz, I mean, see how far they get you. You know, the other thing. I mean, the test of all truth is not just its application and can you carry it out, but, you know, I want to be overly pragmatic, but there is something about if a certain theory doesn't really work, It does become highly suggestive that the theory itself is problematic. You can't really, and this is, I think, a really important argument that like a Jordan Peterson and maybe others have made. I'm sure others have made. And it's this: if you deny free will, you just start to imagine what our lives would be like, not just your own, but our lives together. If everyone you encounter is just simply acting out involuntary brain fizz is causing them to do, and this sort of randomness that Darwin points to in the universe. Well, then, you know, if I choose to be a good person, I'm not really choosing that. That's just how things are turning out. If I choose to be really evil and wicked and indulge myself in a sinful way, well, that's just brain fizz too. So you can't make any moral distinctions, ethical distinctions. You also can't find, I would say you won't be able to find authentic happiness. You won't find the good life, and you won't find human flourishing, because you really don't merit rewards or punishments.
Right.
Because you're not really choosing it.
Right, exactly. And you know, we're in the season of Lent right now, where I think we should all be, to a certain extent, reflecting on the notion of sin. Lent is a time for us to kind of reevaluate our lives, look back at our sins and how we've fallen short of what God has called us to, how we've fallen short of that image that God has created us in. And when you reduce everything down to brain fizz, you don't have room for something like sin. You don't have room for an idea of human perfection that was embodied there in the life of Christ. You don't have room for a sacrificial love that loved us so much that it that it came down, was incarnate here on earth, lived life with us, and ultimately sacrificed, and then most importantly, ultimately forgave us. Without some notion of free will, without some notion of our own choosing, we can neither choose God, and unfortunately, God can't choose us. We're left in a state where sin, although it's not a category of our thinking, sin is what dictates our whole lives, and we're trapped in that sin. And we need a redeemer. We need somebody or something that can come down. And no amount of brain fizz is going to account for that love that's displayed on the cross that we celebrate on Good Friday, and then we ultimately celebrate the triumph over sin, death, and I would say ultimately the triumph over brain fizz on Easter Sunday.
That's all the time we have for the Catholic Cave. Thank goodness. We're going to go on about our lives and living our brain fizz. And we'll see you next time on the Catholic Cave. For Tim O'Donnell, for Mark Tuttle, I'm Kent Blandford. Have a good Lent.
The Catholic Cave is a production of Catholic Radio Indy. Replays of this program are available in podcast form at catholicradioindy.org. Comments about this program can be addressed to kent@catholicradioindy.org or by calling 317-870-8400.
Did you miss something in this show or just want to hear it again? Podcasts of this and all our other great local programs are available 24/7 at catholicradioindy.org.